All right, everybody, welcome to Tech Gumbo. I am Haggai Davis III, co-hosting with Haggai Davis II, and we'd like to welcome you to our show. Here on Tech Gumbo, we talk about the past, present, and future of all things technology in a topical, interesting, and digestible way. We try not to use geek speak or acronyms. We just want to talk about tech in a way that is important or will become important to you after you hear about it. We also want to thank Cardinal Capital. If you are a business owner or a CEO, hopefully you have a good relationship with your bank. But if you're facing challenges, such as a need to consolidate debt, maybe you're in growth mode, you want to buy new equipment, or you're just trying to level out your cash flow, whatever you need, whatever your challenge, give Cardinal Capital a call because they have over 4,000 lenders where they source commercial capital for business clients. Chris, Gary, and Rob at Cardinal Capital have a passion for business and they want your business to succeed. When you meet with Cardinal Capital, they get to know you and your business so they can present your needs to lending institutions that will best fit your unique situation. In short, they go after money for your business. They translate your business into what's important to banks, and they are good at it. Depending upon what the deal is, no matter how complicated or straightforward, they'll help maximize your profitability while setting up your business for success. They find the best solution for your situation. And here's the good part. They are easy and fun to work with. For more detailed information, visit their website at cardinalcap.net, call 225-308-3700, or email them info@cardinalcap.net.
Okay, Mr. Davis, let's stir up a little pot of tech gumbo here.
I'm ready.
So we're going to start off. We've talked about deepfakes in the past, and this story came up this week that businesses are now using deep fakes to make business pitches.
Right. So this is actually pretty interesting. Most of the time, whenever we've been talking about deep fakes, we've talked about them in a pretty negative light. However, this is actually a positive use case. So what's happening here is that there is a Japanese company which is trying to pitch their idea in London. And in order to, you know, better facilitate that, they're having the deep fake. So they're having the person in Japan speak in Japanese. It's being run through an artificial language translator, and the deep fake image is saying the words. So it looks like you're actually speaking to someone who is speaking natural English instead of having the translator in the middle.
This is really cool, and they've got some credibility behind them. The huge accounting firm Ernst & Young is, I mean, they're actually in favor of this. They're trying to use it. And I mean, when you get one of the big four accounting firms to back you or back the concept, that's a whole lot of credibility there.
Yeah, this makes a lot of sense because it now facilitates businesses and transactions and just communication across language barriers. What used to be a barrier is now an impediment, but it's not as insurmountable.
And in this day and age of COVID, it's also not putting somebody on an airplane, flying them around the world, and putting them up in hotels and paying for meals and everything. You're doing this in a virtual environment so that it's happening real time in front of somebody, and it didn't cost you $20,000 to get that person there to go do this.
Yeah. If it becomes natural and they continue to work on this technology, it could be, you know, better than a Zoom call. Zoom calls feel distorted. They feel less real for a variety of reasons, but you're kind of moving into this hyper real space. And so there's a lot of potential here if this continues to gain traction.
And we will definitely keep our eye out like we do on so many topics we continue to follow up on. Another story that's out, the FBI had an oopsie.
Yeah, there was a large data leak here. For some reason, the database of the terrorist watch list was stored on an unsecured IP address in Bahrain, and someone went in and found it and posted it online.
We're talking 1.9 million records of people's citizenship, gender, date of birth, passport numbers, no-fly indicator numbers, in the country where the passports were issued from, and all this information is now out there.
Yeah, that's not great.
You gotta wonder, okay, there's a lot of people out there going, well, hey, how come I'm not on the list? And there's a whole lot of people, oh, damn, I'm on the list. And, you know, they're freaked out by being on the list. So it's that's an interesting take to think how people are reacting to seeing whether they were or were not included.
Oh, I'm definitely certain that there are a lot of people all across the world who were in some shady places who are having strong thoughts, both positive and negative, about this coming out. But it raises the question of, this is probably secure information. I don't think the FBI wanted it broadcast to the whole world. And if they didn't want it, why was it broadcast to the whole world? Why can the FBI not keep something which seems kind of important private?
Kind of in the vein of a follow-up, we talked several months ago about how the FBI had put out all these phones around the world, some 15,000 phones, that every time anybody sent a text message, that text message routed back through FBI headquarters. You got to wonder how many of that 1.9 million records was developed because of those text messages on all of those phones.
Oh, yeah. How many people were out there and, like, were hesitant, were cautious, you know, thought they might be on a watch list somewhere, but now are certain, oh, I was, you know, actually being tracked. Let me do something different now. Let me change my name, change my identity, move so that I shake the trail, because they know that they were being followed now.
Yeah, so this was probably not a good thing. The Department of Homeland Security said, yeah, we acknowledge that this data was leaked, and they thanked the guy who let them know that it was leaked, and so now it's back secured on a secure server, but information's already out.
Yeah, you won't see changes to it, but it doesn't matter. You have the 2 million records posted.
Yeah, the barn is burned, but hey, they just closed the barn door again. You know, okay, great. Good job. Another story, speaking of good jobs, there's a homegrown app in Kabul where residents can see where the danger is and avoid it.
Yeah, it's called Itsab. We're going to butcher the pronunciation for this whole segment, but E-H-T-E-S-A-B. And it was developed by a bunch of young coders who, you know, found a way to collect information from sources that they trusted and then display it on maps so that anybody using it could see where the gunfire is, where the road closures are, things like that.
This is such an interesting use of technology. I mean, so if you're looking at it on your phone, it's kind of like, okay, here's the road maps of the main roads in and around Kabul, and here's hotspots. Here's a safe path, and, you know, don't go here. Little icons popping up in a lot of different places. And so if you're one of these folks trying to get to the airport to get out, this app is a lifesaver.
Literally.
You know, they raised about $15,000 through a GoFundMe campaign to be able to pull it together and have this app up and working. And I marvel at somebody who can take technology like this and use it for good. This is a great thing.
Yeah, and it shows that there are people in Afghanistan and in Kabul who wanted to do the right thing, wanted to help people, wanted to make their country a better place, and that even as the ship is going down, they are still doing everything they can to get every last person off. And that's super cool.
So this is kind of similar to some of the research you've been doing, though.
Yeah. So recently I've been doing some work trying to help develop a navigation system. And you know, you have a network and you have your map and you have, you know, do travel this route, don't travel that route. I would be super interested to know what their backend looks like. But a lot of mapping and routing softwares and having incidents and events, you know, it's whether it be something's flooding, whether it be a car crash, or whether it be a car bomb, you know, a lot of that technology actually translates pretty well.
As a biased dad, I'm very proud of you, but I think it's still really cool to be able to use the technology to help route the traffic the best way to keep it out of the areas that are troublesome or just not designed for a big truck to go through or any kind of delivery truck to go through, because they've got a 12-foot clearance. The truck is 12 foot high, but the clearance is only 11 and a half feet. Well, you know, we've all seen the memes of the truck going underneath the railroad bridge and not making it.
Yeah, the city of New York would like that to happen less. And so having some tools so that if you're driving around, you know, because Google doesn't know how high those bridges are. It has a vague idea, but it's not going to, you know, give you as specific information.
I'm excited about this. I think this is a great app. Staying overseas, this is my favorite story of the day. You've all gotten the email, the Nigerian prince has $15 million, and you know, if you can just put up $30,000, he'll share half of it with you, or some ridiculous email that, you know, identity theft kind of thing. In Nigeria, a ransomware scheme was outed as a bizarre plan to get funding to try and build the Nigerian version of Facebook.
Yeah, this guy was setting out some ransomware. He was not great at it, but he was trying. And then in communications with the victims, he was just telling his life story. You know, he said that he just needed some funds to build his own company. And then eventually he gave out a little bit too much information, and then they tracked him down. But yeah, you know, he was out there thinking he was the next Mark Zuckerberg.
So this guy, he had already had emails of about $1 million in Bitcoin, but he was going to cut 40% of that, you know, so that people would go ahead and pay. Then he just got a little too clever for himself. And these security experts started asking some questions, and he got real proud of everything that he was doing, decided to give up all kinds of personal information that anybody who's wanting to remain private would never have done.
Yeah. And so they put together his name, they put together his identity. They found him on LinkedIn, interestingly enough, and started messaging him. Now, he told PC Mag that that's not true, all of it's fake, all the allegations are false and inaccurate. But whenever these security firms start to put together all the pieces and they, you know, can show, hey, look, here's your IP address, here's all these signatures, you know, that's basically a fingerprint.
Yeah, and so he has shut that down. He's not doing that anymore.
No, I don't think he will be. Yeah, which is, he's clearly talented enough as a programmer. I hope someone will pick him up.
Oh, he definitely has a future in getting a career and getting paid doing something. He's just not going to create the social media network for Nigeria. And if he does, It'll be because somebody has given him some money, not because of the ransomware he was trying to use.
And in the end, it's a good thing he didn't create another Facebook. We don't need any more Facebooks. We don't need the one we already have. So,
isn't that the truth? So another last story we want to talk about here in this segment, Microsoft has announced that they're going to be raising the Microsoft Office 365 subscriptions.
Yeah, so for most, this is between $1 to $4 per user per month, which can start to add up if you have a lot of users, things like that. But whenever you start to think about all the things that are included in Microsoft Office 365 and how long it's been since they've updated the price, that's not a bad deal.
So Microsoft did drop the Office 365, so it's just Microsoft 365 nowadays. But when they first launched Office 365 back in 20, 2013, 2014, something like that. And they had the E1 and the E3 plans. That E3 was $20 a month. And that price hasn't changed. And so now, 10 years later, they're going to go up by $3 per month per user. But if you look at it, there was no Teams back when this first launched. The SharePoint folder only had 10 gigs of total space. And your Outlook only had a 25 gig capacity. Now your Outlook has a 100 gig capacity. Your SharePoint is a terabyte to go along with your OneDrive terabyte. And there's Teams and all the things that Microsoft Teams can do. This is a great bargain at twice the price. And for Microsoft to have held their prices steady for as long as they did, okay, I'm good.
Oh, yeah. Because as you mentioned, you know, those are all things which are easy to point to. But you also just have how much better all this stuff is now than it was a decade ago. It works together better. It's smoother. It's easier to use. It's more powerful. You know, it's better supported. It's not like it's the same thing that it was a decade ago and they're just bumping the prices up. It has continuously gotten better and continues to improve and to be, you know, very valuable. This is just the first time that they're cranking that price up a little bit.
And when you consider how much traffic is going through, Microsoft started off with, I think, 12 data centers around the world. And now I think they're close to 50, maybe 60 data centers around the world that their Microsoft 365 products replicate in. That's a lot of money. I mean, yes, there's a lot of customers worldwide that use the Microsoft, you know, 365 products. But still, when you consider the level of security that Microsoft has now, when the reliability of the product, the functionality is just, and I mean, the whole collaboration space is so critical to the way we do things now, especially in the world of COVID when we're all working from home or working remotely. It's incredibly important.
Oh yeah. The engineering firm that I was working for before I started the PhD, everything went through Teams. Everything went through Office. We very literally relied on them. And if that were to go down or disappear, all work would halt immediately until it like came back up. And I kind of knew that, and I kind of appreciated how smooth everything was integrated. But now that I'm at a university and we don't have the, you know, engineering grade software, and we have Gmail mixed with Zoom, mixed with all these other things, and it's an unholy mess strung together, I'm like, oh, I did not realize how nice it was to just create a meeting in a calendar, invite people, set it at a time, and then later on, just go open it up in, you know, the video conferencing software. That is so smooth, you don't realize that those are different things in the Microsoft environment. And you definitely do know that in the other environments.
And just the way you can so seamlessly import your Excel and your Word files and your PowerPoints through SharePoint. And I mean, Jesus, the SharePoint folders alone that at General Informatics we used are Microsoft 365 extensively between SharePoint and OneDrive and obviously all of our email going through the system. Teams is just such a huge part of what we do running the company. And I could not imagine if somebody came in tomorrow and said, that's it, Microsoft's done. We would be hurting for communicating as a company.
Oh yeah, and the SharePoint in, you know, on some projects has just replaced the internal server. We used to have a server where all the files sat. We migrated them into SharePoint in a couple different projects because it was just easier. It was more smooth integration with everything. It was just so convenient and so useful and so powerful. Yeah, this price going up thing, I'm sure Arcadis is like, whatever, name your number. Only $3 more a month, done.
Yeah, absolutely. And very happy that it works as well as it does.
Yeah.
And we also want to thank General Informatics. General Informatics is an information technology firm with a mission to make our clients even more successful through the best use of technology. From the beginning, we have maintained our commitment to meeting the growing needs of our clients through continuous innovation. With over 20 years of experience and a team of 70-plus engineers, programmers, and designers, GI has evolved to become the leading IT partner of businesses, schools, and government agencies. Our managed services teams can run your digital infrastructure and support your team on an on-demand basis, letting you focus on your business strengths. This has become a proven formula, so proven that 98% of our clients continue to do business with us year after year. The true testament to GI's success, however, has been the strategic support to our clients' growth. Today, GI has a record number of clients on the Inc. 505,000 list. Whether you need IT services, new technology, or have a question, visit us on the web at geninf.com.
If you enjoyed our show today, we are here on Talk 107.3 FM every Saturday at 4 p.m. and the show reruns Sundays also at 4 p.m. If you missed any part of the show or you'd like to hear previous episodes, check us out as a podcast available on almost every podcast platform, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Google Music, and more. When you're there, be sure to subscribe so you get notified every time a new episode is posted. If you like our show, let us know. Text at 225-255-0431 with a question, and if we feature your question in an episode, we will send you a Tech Gumbo mug. Thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.